Welcome to the Advocacy Podcast, Journeys to Excellence. We speak with Queen's Counsel, trial lawyers and judges from around the world about how they excel in the courtroom. Please subscribe on your favourite podcast platform and visit us for additional resources at theadvocacypodcast.com.
I'm your host, Bibi Badejo. In today's fascinating brief episode, we explore the intersection of law and neuroscience. Rex Paris explains the neurology behind courtroom anxiety. Josidu Casey shares insights on achieving a Zen-like state. And Justin Kahn reveals how neuroscience can guide our approach to advocacy.
I can give you the neurology of why a courtroom is so terrifying to people. It is perceived in our limbic brain as a life-threatening event. You know, and the reason for that is how did we evolve? We evolved in tribes. The average tribe was about 12 families. And all of the resources were controlled by the chief. Chief didn't like you, you died. Not only did you die, your family died. They starved to death. If you were banished from the tribe, you died. You know, the tribe a mile away would kill you. The animals would eat you. You would starve to death. You'd freeze to death. Being banished was death. So what do we experience in a courtroom? We've got the chief up there looking down on us. We got the 12 family representatives in the jury box, right? And one of us are going to get banished. It's a certainty. Right? One of us have to be banished. Now, the cortex can deal with all that very well, but not our limbic brain. And that's why it no longer surprises me because I understand it. But as I have gone up in the profession, the level of the cases that I try have greater and greater value. So there's these white shoe, tall building law firms, you know, with 1,000 lawyers. And the senior partner's up there at the lectern with his hand shaking just a little bit, you know, and his voice cracking just a little bit. And, you know, you recognize that this terror is not unique. It's not a character flaw. It doesn't mean you're weak. It means you're a human being, you know, and that's what you're responding to. Primarily, what I walked away with, people walk away with many things, but what I walked away with was a recognition that showing our vulnerability to each other is what binds us to each other. It's what connects us. And lawyers are the last people willing to show any vulnerability. And at the Trial Lawyers College, we did all kinds of skills and we did the traditional stuff. But one of the techniques they use is role reversals. Every witness you're going to do, you do a role reversal. You be the witness, have somebody question you, or you question somebody playing the witness, you know. But the idea is to try to get in their skin, try to see the world the way they see the world. That's extremely effective when you're picking a jury. That's the beginning of the process. Too often I find people stop there. You know, you then have to speak the language of that juror. You know, once you know who he is, once you know who your jury is, you have to change your presentation to put it in a language, present it in a way that is going to be most conducive to them learning what you're teaching. Because that's ultimately what we are. We are teachers. And how well we do that will determine what kind of result it is. So I guess that was the first thing I learned. I went into it with the view that good lawyers were the meanest junkyard dog on the block, you know. We had these mock trials, and I'm doing the opening. I compulsively work on this stuff. And there was a guy named Judge Bob Rose, who was a Wyoming Supreme Court Justice, who was retired. He's really old at the time, and he had one eye, you know, he had a patch over his eye, and he's in a wheelchair, but he's one of my jurors. When I went up to him after it was over, and I said, "So how was it?" And he goes, "That was the finest opening I've ever seen. And then you turned into the biggest asshole I've ever seen." And it was because of how I was treating the other side. You know, I mean, I wouldn't let him say anything the way I was objecting, the way I was just messing with him, you know. He had tears in his eyes, and, you know, I mean, it was ugly. It was really ugly. And what Judge Rose told me, he said, you know, once you have all the power in the room, you don't do anything to look like a bully, because people will immediately hate you when that happens. And of course they do. But when you start looking at it as a power dynamic, and, you know, that started me on this path.
Breathing is so important. Whether you're an actor on stage or you're an advocate, which is a form of acting in itself, you must ensure that you are inhaling and you are exhaling in a very controlled, steady fashion. It's important for all sorts of reasons. One, because it means that if you're breathing correctly, your body is more likely to be in a correct posture. Because if you're hunched over, your lungs are going to be compressed. It's harder to inflate them to get the air up. Secondly, if you're sitting correctly and you're breathing correctly, you're more likely to draw air up from the bottom of your lungs rather than the top part. And as you'll know, Bibi, when people get nervous in court, you find that you can't get through even a sentence or two before you're desperate to take a breath. And that's because the air is coming only from the top part of your lungs. So breathing is really important. Posture is very important. Focus is very important. And putting blinkers on as if you're a horse in a race is really crucial. Because if you start thinking about what that juror over there is doing, fidgeting with their papers, or the usher is doing near the door exit of the court, or the judge is doing who's frowning, or what my opponent is doing, it's going to take me away from where I need to be. I need to be in a zen-like state. I need to know exactly what I'm about to do, and nothing is going to get in the way of that. The best advocates are the biggest control freaks in the universe. They are the people who actually know what's going on around them in court. They're almost like, you know, the radar that you have, you know, what they call it, the ATC at Heathrow Airport, that constantly goes around. It's almost like if you're a really good advocate, you should have this thing going around your head, constantly picking up information around the courtroom, okay? But in a way that doesn't affect your performance. It's just that you're getting the information coming to you. So when you've got a witness, the witness is part of that circularity of information in the courtroom, and you need to tune into their frequency. So what I would say to you is this, Bibi. The best advocates are emotionally intelligent women and men. They can read people quite well. They know if their witness is nervous. They know if their witness needs to be settled in. They know if their witness is struggling. They know if their witness is actually having a problem remembering it. And they know before the problem happens and becomes manifest enough to cause an issue in the trial. So you need to be emotionally intelligent. The worst people as advocates that I come across, whether it's in examination chief, direct examination or cross-examination, are the ones who sound like, I couldn't care less who you are as a witness. You're just another witness. It's just another day at work for me. I don't really care whether you suffered a terrible injury or whatever. I'm not really bothered about that. I just want you to answer my questions so that we can get it done. Okay? That's terrible. Because what that means is that you really aren't communicating to your audience that you care. And the first thing I do, if I'm calling a witness, or even if I'm watching a witness being called by my opponent, as I study them, from the moment they come through the door of the court, I'm watching them as they walk. I watch them walk into the witness box. I watch them as they take the oath or make an affirmation to tell the truth. I watch them as they hold their religious book. And then I'm thinking to myself, what emotional state is this witness in? Is it a professional witness like a police officer or an expert witness who's super confident, does it all the time, it's just another day at work for them? Or is it someone who's never been in court before and it's an absolutely terrifying experience for them? Now, if you are examining your own witness in chief and you don't care what state, emotional state they're in, the questions that you ask are not going to get the best out of your witness. So first thing, number one, tune in. Tune in to their frequency, read them, human being to human being across the courtroom, read them. If they sound nervous, change the tone in your voice. So when I said to you earlier on, Bibi, versatility is important, I've given you what I think is the most important way to approach case preparation. If you say to me, Joe, what's the most important quality, single quality you need as an advocate to get you through one end of your career to the other, pain-free and as successfully as possible, I will say to you, versatility. It's the ability to adapt to your environment, to your tribunal, and to your witness.
There are a couple of different aspects that I like to think of in terms of neuroscience and what it can offer a trial lawyer. And there's sort of three, at least two or three different areas that are of interest to me is, how does learning work? How do you go about learning? How does anybody sit down and take in information and learn a new idea for the first time? What's involved with that process? One of the points that I've gotten out of Richard Meyer's books is this idea called cognitive load. And if you as the instructor are increasing the cognitive load, that is, you are overwhelming the person's ability to take in and process the information, then learning is going to go down and their stress levels are going to go up. So what can you do as the presenter of this information, of these ideas, to decrease the cognitive load, to make it easier for the person to take in the information? Because when you decrease the cognitive load, learning goes up. And there's certain principles associated with decreasing cognitive load. There's many, many principles. I mean, there's a big, thick book of them. But a couple of them that I think are applicable to lawyers in general is a concept called segmenting. If you start off talking about a very complex idea and present a very complex image to someone, it's too much information at once, and it's too much cognitive load, and they block it out and they can't get it. Versus segmenting, if you present the big picture first and then you start diving down into the narrow specifics, it's easier for the person to take in that information and process it. So I see it as my job as the lawyer to recognize these various principles about how attention works, how learning works, how this pre-attentive processing works, and then try to figure out how to mechanically use that in presenting information and ideas to whether it's a judge or jury to help them with the decision making. That to me is part of the neuroscience aspect. And I've got several books that I'll provide the listeners with a list of some books to think about. That to me is how a lawyer can think about and use some neuroscience principles and apply that to the instruction sort of aspect of what a lawyer is doing.
Are you an experienced trial lawyer who feels like you've hit a plateau? If you want to take your advocacy skills to the next level, feedback is key. And I have just the thing for you. I'm Bibi, the voice of the Advocacy Podcast and founder of The Advocacy Coach. Every month, I host The Advocacy Clinic. It's a free and unique online platform for lawyers to practice oral arguments or witness handling with seasoned actors. Then receive real-time, personalized feedback. Whether you actively engage or simply observe, it's an unmatched opportunity to hone your advocacy skills. To join, just sign up at theadvocacycoach.com/clinic. Become unstoppable at court with The Advocacy Coach, your partner in your journey to advocacy excellence.
Thank you for listening to the Advocacy Podcast, Journeys to Excellence. If you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe and visit us at theadvocacypodcast.com for reading lists and other resources. Until next time.